Situated along the small but busy Banda Street, the ash grey of the Macmillan Library building stands out with its British colonial design.
The Macmillan Memorial Library and its two branches in Eastland.
It's one of Nairobi's oldest buildings. The Macmillan Library was built in 1931 to honor an American explorer who came to the country at the start of the 20th century.
The Macmillan Library.
Yo, I know this is our podcast and everything, but why is that intro so jarring? Was it just me?
I think it may have to do with... Actually, how many times do you think we've said that name in the last 5 years? Macmillan. The Macmillan Memorial Library.
Macmillan Memorial Library. So many times, it feels like it's lost its meaning. It barely has any meaning to me now.
Well, that's an awkward statement for an episode about the meaning of names.
Okay, fine, wait. What I mean is, of course, the thing means something. Of course, it symbolizes things. What does it mean anyway?
Macmillan is the anglicized form of the old Gaelic word Machgilivul, later shortened to Machmulain. The Gaelic Mach means son of, Gile, a servant, and Mul, the tonsured one. The forefather of the Macmillan clan was said to be Ebertach, a Hebridean prince of the old royal house of Moray. Ebertach had a son named Cormac, and his son Gilchrist was the forebear of the clan Anvuil. He was a religious man and wore the tonsure, done by cutting his hair from the scalp, which gave him the nickname Mullin or Gilimul.
There you go. It does mean something.
I suppose it means something. It means son of the bald servant, I suppose. Okay.
It means something to someone, but maybe nothing to us.
Maybe nothing to us. You are listening to A Palace for the People. I am Wanjiro Koinange.
And I am Angela Washuka.
And today, obviously, we're talking about names.
And one name in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The Gaelic Mach means son of. Gile, a servant.
Yeah. We heard you the first time. We got it.
We've gotten one question a lot when we speak about Bookbank's work restoring the libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what we should do?
Are you guys changing the name? Are you changing it?
Change the name.
You should decolonize yourselves and change the name.
And it makes sense. In Kenya, we have a history with names and of changing them.
Completely. And it's not just a Kenyan thing. It's all over.
Yeah, to be fair, names are a battlefield all over the world.
Turkey has officially changed its name to Turkeia. The UN has agreed to recognize...
Former Swaziland King Muswati III has changed his country's name from Swaziland to Eswatini to mark 50 years since independence from...
Berkeley has taken the name off of one of its buildings because of racist views of its namesake.
A namesake associated with a racist past?
Check.
Okay, we're going to get back to the namesake in a bit. But first, I want to talk about how Kenya has dealt with naming and changing in the past. Obviously, in a place with almost 70 mother tongues, we have...
Many names. So let's start here.
Nairobi.
In itself, a name that, well, it wasn't even the right name.
So what we know about Nairobi in the pre-colonial times, it was generally a very swampy and cool area. We know that the Maasai community would come and graze their cattle there because there were many rivers passing through Nairobi. And so the name that was there at the time was Enkare Nairobi, which is a Maasai name, which can be literally translated into a place of cool waters. So when the colonial administration settled here for a while, I think they couldn't pronounce the name Enkare Nairobi properly. And what they deduced from it was Nairobi.
This is Dr. Melissa Wanjiro Mwita.
I am an urban planner, urban and regional planner by profession, but I'm also a cultural and political geographer. What this means is that at my PhD level, I focused more on political and cultural geography and mostly on the issue of place naming.
Once the settlers had a name, they began to name different parts of the city they were building.
So when you look at the Nairobi itself, as it developed as a railway town originally, and this is in the early 1900s, so the names that were, the city actually was quite functional, like the names were just to identify places, and the original naming, quote-unquote, was not names but numbers. So we had streets and avenues named as they were originating from the railway station. And so from there we had 1st Avenue, 2nd Avenue, 3rd, up to the 10th Avenue.
Then in 1920, when Kenya became an official colony, the name started getting a bit more Britishy.
That's when now the British government now became aggressive in terms of exporting or bringing their names to the city. So one of the things they wanted to commemorate was the British monarchy, as well as the railway administrators and also the provincial administrators. So we not only had the engineers who were responsible for the railway, but now even the administrators, they saw that Nairobi was actually growing very fast and they moved their administration to Nairobi.
Okay, so you're like an engineer, like just a regular Mr. John engineer or whatever, and you're just like a professional living in the city, and you could go to a place and be like, hey, sir, I would like a street, please.
One street for you, Mr. John. Or you could try for a whole city.
How could I now?
You'll find even we have Port Florence, which is the previous name of Kisumu. So that name was given in honor of the wife of the engineer of the railway. So once they set foot at Port Florence, which is now Kisumu, he named that city or that town in honor of his wife. But all these names remained up until after independence. That's when now they were changed. In 1963, we gained independence. In 1964, Kenya became a republic. So in the coming years, 4 or 5 years, there was really no law, there was no policy that could be followed in terms of changing names. But you know, the names that were most important were those in the central part of the city. So for those names, the names were just changed based on political power. Whoever was in charge and whoever was most powerful, they got the streets renamed to their names.
So we got Kenyatta Avenue, which was renamed from Delamere, for example.
And then some other streets such as Koinange Street. So Koinange was a close ally of the first president of Kenya, and he had that main street also named after him.
Hey, shout out to the ancestors. Yes, indeed. My grandfather, Mbio Koinange, was an ally of Kenyatta's, who held a couple of positions in government, including Minister for Pan-African Affairs, which sadly no longer exists. I never met him, though. He died in 1981, a few years before I was born. But I guess I'm definitely not the one to be throwing shade at Mr. John Smith up there. Sorry, Mr. Engineer.
Your note on reclaiming the shade thrown at John Engineer is noted. But sometimes there wasn't consensus on who would get memorialized. Who was important enough or who was too difficult, for instance?
Tom Mboya was a very popular figure during the post-colonial period. And really, people could see him as sort of a breath of fresh air. And he had a large following, and he was also a trade unionist. Now, when he suddenly died by assassination in 1969... the country was just sort of thrown into chaos.
As the body of Tom Mboya was on its way to All Saints Roman Catholic Cathedral, the pent-up tensions of the waiting crowd neared danger point.
And when it comes to naming, there was a lot of issues that came up when it came to commemorating. Tom Mboya was assassinated while he was buying some drugs at a chemist along Government Road. So many people thought that it goes without saying that that's where he should be. That's the street that should be renamed after him. But that was a very large road. It was very big. And the government said, oh, look, this road does not have any colonial connotations, because at the time it was called Government Road. Even though it was named Government Road during the colonial times. So if you are to think further, you'd say, which government was it referring to? Obviously, the colonial government. But the lobbying to have that road named, or that avenue named after him, it did not work. So they had to settle for the next best road, which was now the former Victoria Street, which was now renamed to Tom Mboya Street, and it's currently still Tom Mboya Street.
That reminds me of all the lobbying that went around to get Forest Road to be renamed after the late, great Professor Wangari Maathai. In fact, actually, when I think about it, there's not very many women who are commemorated on our streets and roads.
No, there are. They're not. And I've also always wondered about, like, what does that process look like? Like, who do you petition?
How many women can you name?
How many women are on our roads? Let's Google.
You know, Google?
Huh, okay. Uh-huh. Guess what comes up first?
Is it Karen Road?
It is.
Of course it is.
Named after Karen Blixen. Oh, here's a surprising one. There's one called Tubman.
After Harriet Tubman?
It's not clear because it just says Tubman, but the first name.
Don't bother to use her first name. Okay.
Isn't there? You've got Sioki Mau. That's in Embakasi.
Three of them.
You've got Mamangena, obviously.
Yeah, there's four, but I can count 1,000 women whose names should be on streets.
Right.
Like today.
There are other people who have contributed to the development of Kenya. We have artists. We have people like Ngugi wa Thiong'o, who is a well-known author. We have people like our athletes, Kipchoge Keino, more recently Eliud Kipchoge. So many of our athletes who have put Kenya on the world map in the Olympics and other marathons. They really don't get a place on our street names. So that's what that's the new question that place naming experts or cultural geographers, they have to ask themselves. How then can we incorporate this new generation of leaders, new generation of heroes that we are seeing coming up, such that we are not always talking about the political elite, we are not always celebrating presidents and prime ministers or something like that. We need to celebrate other people who have contributed to the development of our country. But I have to say that we have a long way to go. Because apart from actually Professor Wangari Maathai, some of the most recent renamings are still after politicians. I'll give an example of a street, the Lavington area, that was previously Dick Dick Road, and it was changed to Francis Atwoli Road. So you know Francis Atwoli has been the Kotu general for so many years, and he's really a controversial political figure. And when that street was renamed after him, it just brought a lot of mixed reactions, especially on social media.
Shortly after the launch, a section of Kenyans took to social media to mock the renaming. But in a quick rejoinder, Atwoli fired back at his critics, quashing reports purporting that the signpost bearing the name had been vandalized.
So while it might seem as a more distant issue, like it's not very pertinent, but whenever one of the names is changed, you find that there's a lot of public reactions, and then that actually shows that people have an interest. People care about the names that are in our streets. Therefore, we should give it more attention, especially the county government of Nairobi. Should place more emphasis when it comes to place naming. I think it will give our city more legibility. It will make people more conscious of the spaces they live in. and I hope that we can continue discussing more.
Dr. Muita is really schooling us, and everything that she's saying makes so much sense to me. And I guess to bring it back to where we started.
Mm-hmm. Back to Mr. Macmillan and the Memorial Library.
Right. I'm curious about what public sentiment is around changing the name of this library. There's definitely a desire for Bookbank to lead this process.
Yeah, we've always wanted to.
And it is a colonial name.
It is a colonial name of a wealthy settler. And yes, it's a library in memory of a person, but it's also from an era that didn't really allow us, Black Kenyans, into the building.
It's not in keeping with the ethos of an inclusive public library. We don't know what a new name might be.
We don't, because it's not really up to us, is it? Mm-mm. It's up to the residents of this city. Yes, it's up to Nairobians. And like Dr. Muita said, we need public participation to make sure that the name represents what people actually want.
Mm-hmm. But I think we both have felt that it made no sense to change the name, to go through that process, until we were able to fix up the building, mm-hmm. to give it all the things that it needs, like practical things like toilets and Wi-Fi and a space to hold exhibitions and
all the invisible stuff as well, the programming, the collections, the stuff that make really old 90-year-old problematic buildings come alive.
Indeed. So we've spent the last 2 years getting a mini degree in engineering, spent a lot of time with architects and engineers and designers and plumbers and everyone. And now we have a plan for what we need to do.
And we have a giant spreadsheet that tells us how much it's all going to cost.
Ka-ching.
Mm-hmm.
So these plans are currently under review for approval by the powers that be. The National Museums of Kenya, for instance, are in charge of approving any changes that you would like to make to heritage sites.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the custodians of the building themselves, the Nairobi City County Government.
Yep. And we need the money. So we're currently planning all the fundraising. And I have to say here that if you're listening and would like to support this important work, please check us out on bookbank.org and reach out to us and let us know that you want to give us all your acres and acres.
Acres and acres. And then once we've secured the bag, we anticipate that it will take about 18 to 24 months to get the restoration work done.
Yeah.
And then we can finally reopen the new building to the public and start to think about this issue to do with the naming.
Yeah, but 18 to 24 months feels like a long time. So maybe in the meantime,
mm-hmm.
I personally would be super keen to hear what some of our listeners want the library to be called. I guess public participation, right?
Absolutely, and yeah. We can do this on Twitter, so
let's do it on Twitter.
Tweet us. Our handle is @TheBookBank.
Let us know.
This is A Palace for the People. I'm Angela Washuka.
And I am Wanjiru Koinange. This episode was produced by me, Wanjiru Koinange, Angela Washuka, Maeve Francis, and Ida Holinambi. This is a Fathom Sirens production. You can learn more about our work at bookbank.org.
This podcast is supported by the Cultural Protection Fund, a partnership between the British Council and the UK Government's Department for Digital, Culture, Media, and Sport. Thank you for listening.